Live and local with Cathy Caton.
I'm Cathy Caton and this is BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey. Make Good Trouble is a Sussex-based social enterprise that works with teenagers, parents and schools to tackle issues around teen mental health and well-being. They recently ran a successful campaign called Brighton 5, which encourages teens to share their stories around issues like negative body image, device addiction and self-harm. Make Good Trouble's aim is to create a supportive space for families to share problems, tips and ways to understand each other. With me are Daisy, Jane and Harry, all parents of teenagers, and Rosie from Hove Park School, who we're going to keep out of the picture for the second. Well, I first of all ask you each to introduce yourself and just to tell me what's brought you here.
Kicking off with me, hi, I'm Daisy. I'm the founder of Make Good Trouble and Brighton 5. And we're here because when I went through some difficult problems with my daughter, I've got two teenage daughters. One of the things I really noticed was I didn't have anyone necessarily to talk to. And then when I discovered a whole load of other parents that I could talk to and compare notes with, it really made a massive difference. So that's kind of the point of it, really.
Hi, I'm Harry. I'm a father of a teenage son and a grown-up daughter. And I got involved with the Brighton 5 crowdfunding appeal. And I've been looking at the blog ever since and really interested in what Daisy's doing with this, and it's got some great information on there as well.
Hi, I'm Jane. I'm a parent of a 13-year-old girl and a younger son, and I got involved in this when I was at a school event and I bumped into Daisy, who was talking about setting up this campaign. And at the time I had nowhere to turn to for help, and was having some really troubling times with my daughter, and it came about just at the right time for me.
That we've got so much to discuss and dig into there, and but first, Rosie, tell us what you're up to and your role and involvement here.
So I am very fortunate to be one of the adults that people turn to when they need a bit of help with their teenagers. So I work in Hove Park Secondary School. I'm an integrative arts counsellor and I straddle two teams. So I'm one of the assistant heads of Year 10, and then I also have a caseload as a counsellor as well.
What is an integrative arts person? What's that mean?
So I'm a counsellor that kind of combines more traditional talking therapies with the use of arts.
And take me into some of the initial issues. I didn't really want to start off with saying the issue word, but actually there's so much stuff around. You've all three parents you've mentioned have different things that have brought you to a point. Is there a key one that sticks out as a parent of a teen talking to another teen parent?
I think one of the main things for me is about communication and how to communicate with your teen, and it can be incredibly difficult. It's about timing. There's so many things that can go wrong.
Yeah.
And it's kind of understanding your teen as well, because I don't think I'm alone in this room to say that we didn't grow up with social media. And, you know, when I was a kid, we didn't even have mobile phones or anything. We had a phone, an old dial phone, you know. So it's kind of understanding what teenagers are doing, whether you feel fine with that or not in terms of social media, and just sort of trying to get your head around it all, really.
Yeah.
And obviously, everybody wants to be a good parent. And sometimes it's really difficult because you feel like you're not. And so, you know, it's that isolating feeling. And so it's about communication, really.
Let's have a listen. Actually, to you've we've got a collection of Voxworks voices of young people that we're going to be listening to while we're chatting today. Who have we got first?
This is a 19-year-old girl.
I don't want to be a teenager. Well, I can't wait to just be out of that completely and just never go back ever again. I don't think it was my environment at all. I think it was just me. When I was a teenager, very, very naive and very sad a lot of the time. So I think I'm talking about in the past tense because I'm trying to just look forward. So, like, treat it as if it's not still a thing that I am.
Question for all of you. What's it like to listen to that? You know, why is it so difficult to get a teen to communicate?
I think I think it's interesting hearing that, because it's slightly sad that, that I think we all remember being teenagers and being a bit miserable at times, and nobody wants their kid to be miserable. And so I think we all just try and lighten up the world and try and ease some of that pain, really.
I think teenagers feel like they're caught in between two worlds, where especially when they start secondary school and they start that their friends become the most important thing in the world to them, not their parents, and they're not children anymore, but yet they're not quite adults. So they're sort of caught in this halfway place, and sometimes they behave like adults and other times they behave like kids. Sometimes their parents treat them like adults and other times their parents treat them like kids, but that doesn't always happen in sync. So I think that's where the communication can go a bit wrong.
Absolutely. I think also there's hormones. You put those into the mix and then there you
they are strong chemicals.
It's hard to navigate.
And there's such an emotional intensity that goes along with adolescence. Everything's all or nothing, heaven or hell, the best or the worst. And that's really difficult to navigate when you don't know how you're going to be feeling one day to the next. You don't know what response you're going to be met with from your peers who are in a similar position, from your parents who are treating you more like an adult but more like a child. It's very up and down and round and kind of messy.
Definitely.
It's definitely a roller coaster because they're up and down and you're not sure where they're going to be.
Yeah, and neither are they often.
Yeah.
And also it depends whether you're tired as well. If you've had a long day and then they come in and things go a bit wrong, it's a difficult one, isn't it?
There's also the pace of change with their bodies and their emotions and their responses. And I don't know if I'm alone in this, but sometimes I look at my son and I think, who is that person? Because he's changed from a little kid to a 6-foot giant.
Yeah. In how long?
In a year. You know? Literally, one minute I went to his bedroom and there was a little kid lying in his bed. I opened the door the next day and there's a 6-foot bloke lying.
No, exactly. It's really hard, isn't it, to navigate?
We sometimes see that over the course of a summer holiday. They go away in year 8 and 9 and they come back, a foot higher, voice is broken.
It must be a shock for them to change that quickly and have to deal with it physically and emotionally. I can't remember it happening to me, but
my son said the other day, he said it's not that he feels bigger, it just looks around and looks at like everybody looks tiny, and he said even I, his father, look small to him now. It's like I've shrunk.
It's a compliment.
I wanted to ask through my parents about if that makes you reflect on your teenage experience and have things been sent to haunt you.
My mum would love this question because she thinks this is comeuppance now that my youngest is just like I was. But and she's right, actually. But I also think as a parent, you tend to overcompensate for the things that you think weren't right when you grew up. Mm-hmm. And I've definitely done that.
Give me an example.
Well, I never got a lift anywhere, but that was because my mum worked 52. Well, she drove 52 miles a day. It's 26. There, 26 back. She lived in worked in a different county, and so I was sort of left to my own devices. But there were times when I really could have done with a lift, even when I was sort of caught short somewhere. And I blamed her for years for that. And only now do I realise that she didn't really have a choice. And so what did I do? I gave my kids lifts everywhere to the point where I became the chauffeur. And then I was like, what am I doing? And so I then said, right, well, I'm not doing lifts after when you get into secondary school because you've got a bus pass. And that went down not very well at all. But, you know, that rod for my own back. But that was me overcompensating for stuff I'd done that happened to me as kids. I think you tend to sort of look at the way you were brought up and sort of try and spin it around. I don't know what you think, Harry. But
yeah, I agree. Although I get slightly the reverse in that my telephone data package on my phone is so prehistoric. My son takes the mickey out of me, and when he's on the phone all the time or using his data, I'm like, oh, you've got to save it, it's going to cost you a fortune. He's like, it's all free, Dad, all month, it's free.
Jane, how about you?
I can't believe I'm admitting this, I think I was quite a deceitful teenager. So I think when I'm looking at my daughter, I think that she's going to be as deceitful. Maybe I'm not saying I was terrible, but I was just probably quite manipulative and sort of clever and got away with things. So I think maybe I portray that onto her and think that she's going to be almost as bad as I was, which is obviously completely the wrong thing to do because she's her own person. But in other ways, I think I was probably calmer than her. I don't remember the roller coaster ride quite that she's going through. So yeah, there's some similarities, some differences, but I probably portray the worst of me onto her, which very unfairly so.
I think there's also something about technology, because when, and going back to your thing about being deceitful, because my mum had we had a dial phone and it had a lock on it.
Yeah.
But someone told us that you could tap it using the little black buttons. So one tap was one and 10 taps was zero. So if someone had lots of zeros in their number, it was a bit of a pain because you're desperately trying to. But you could ring someone with the dial phone, with the lock on. And so we were totally all doing that. Everybody was coming, you know, there was no problem with that at all. So teenagers are really clever. Yeah. They're devious. Yeah. They're really clever. They will find a way around something. And it's the same with trying to confiscate devices or trying to turn the Wi-Fi off. They will try everything, even absurd lengths, to try and bend all of those rules. But you look at the, you know, the biology and what's going on in their brains, and the area that's responsible for taking risk is much, much bigger than it is in an adult. Mm. And so we're all more risk averse because we're older, and they're the absolute opposite to that. So sometimes now when things happen in my household, I kind of go, oh, well, all right, it's a teenage thing. And, you know, and then you have to sort of admit that you kind of might have done something.
Yeah.
And Rosie, what's the view, what's kind of your professional angle view on that, and particularly around devices and...
Yeah, we've spoken about this quite a lot in other times that we've met together as a group, and we've spoken about there being such a big gulf between sort of adults' perceived understanding of the digital world and what it means to young people. So adults tend to draw quite a distinct line between the real world and the online world, and that line doesn't exist to young people. The Sure. online world is the real world. It's where they socialise, it's where they figure out who they are, it's where they show others who they are. So even if you speak to young people that have had quite negative experiences on social media, whatever that looks like, they're still very enamoured with it, and sort of reticent to say, no, this is a negative force in my life, because to them it is a positive thing.
I'd agree, and certainly from a boy's perspective, I think that people often worry about Xbox, etc., that sort of thing, but these days, because they're all hooked up on headphones and mic'd up, it's entirely sociable, and I think it's a really good thing, and it's a good place for them to make friends and discuss things with their friends. Oh, I beg your pardon, sorry, I'm speaking to the mic. They can discuss things with their friends and really get into social groups online. And so I think it's a force for good in lots of ways.
Yeah, because you've watched your son do that, and it's, you know, you've had quite a laugh watching him do that.
They make me laugh. I listen to my son, and whilst he's slaughtering hundreds of thousands of people on some hideous game, he's at the same time talking to his mate saying, oh, do you see what Mrs. Smith did in class today? It was really funny. And so they're just having a conversation with this just inane, completely abstract thing going on the screen.
So I guess that then kind of is the question about, you know, who do your teens turn to when they need to talk, and how do they go about it? And are those things completely different now?
As we kind of mentioned earlier, adolescence is a time when sort of social bonds and the support from their friends and wanting that kind of validation from peers becomes much, much, much more important. So often they do turn to their friends, particularly as they feel like adults don't understand them or have no idea what's going on. How could you? That is who they turn to. If you're lucky, there might be other adults in the family who they turn to, friends of the family,
grandparents,
feels like anyone but their parents often.
Yeah. I think it all depends on what the issue is as well, because my daughter will come to me with certain issues, but certain ones I know she hasn't, but then I'm lucky that she'll go say to my mum or
like what kind of thing?
Well, if it's an argument with me, she'll go to my mum, and then my mum is brilliant because she'll ring me later and tell me what's been said.
This is what you need to know.
Yeah, and then my daughter will say, oh, I spoke to Nanny about that. And I'll say, how did that go? And she'll go, she agreed with you. And I go, oh, 10 points to Nanny, I owe her a glass of wine. But yeah, but it depends on what it is. You know, if it's bullying or something like that, it's a bigger issue. And then, you know, there's many ways that you have to deal with that, whether that's through the school or... You know, then it's sort of more of a group effort, isn't it? It depends on what it is.
I think there's one advantage from my angle. My son's mother and I are separated, but we get on pretty well, and so we can exchange information, and he'll talk to her about certain things but not me, and vice versa. And so we can compare notes as well, and it's quite helpful, actually. It's one of the few advantages there are from being separated.
I don't think my daughter probably talks to people in a way that she necessarily... She doesn't really open up to her friends about her problems, and that's part of the problem with my daughter, is that she's sort of bottled everything in up inside. But I'd love for her to be able to go to, you know, a group of older girls who've been through some of the similar issues that she's been through and get some advice from them, or be able to talk to a sort of a trusted friend or a member of the family who's a bit further removed. But she, I think she views it as talking about it as being a weakness. So I'm trying to say to her, actually, no, you know, a problem, you know, problem aired is a problem shared. And I think communication about things is so important. So I am trying to get her to open up. She does talk to me about things, but I just wish that she'd feel able to talk more freely to some of her friends and other trusted people.
I think that's interesting, actually, that you've just touched on something. I think they are quite... Teenagers are quite scared to show it as a weakness.
Yeah.
I think it's really
vaguely terrifying. It's like, oh, you know, we're, these generations of repressed adults. Yeah. Surely your teenagers should be in a better place.
And it can be different for boys and girls, can't it? Like, you know, you were talking earlier about that.
For sure. I think boys... I feel boys find it more difficult... As a bloke with a son, we use sport as a complete sideline, and so we'll go and play basketball or football or whatever, and then we'll start talking, or we'll go and watch sport, and we'll start talking about things completely unconnected to the sport. And that's kind of blokes in general, actually. You know, me and my mates will go to the pub and talk about our issues whilst watching a game and having a beer, and it just seems like that's an innate part of our psyche, really.
Mm. If you're focusing on something else, it's almost like you're not really focusing on the issue that you're talking about.
Yeah, it gives you a bit of emotional distance,
From a school perspective, how does that chime and fit?
Well, I just... would agree with Jane. We've sort of realised that there is quite a big stigma around talking about mental health, so that's one of the things that we have worked really hard at over the last 18 months or so, and that idea that peer support can be really, really valuable. So we've trained up some mental health and wellbeing champions. We've done it for 2 years now, so we've got, I would say, about 50. So
who are the kids? I think you
they are. Yeah, they're the right. young people from year idea. Seven yeah. to sixth form. So Fantastic. We train them using an adapted version of the mental health first aid course, and they're identifiable to each other. They've got very beautifully designed badges.
It goes a long way, that, as
yeah,
well.
Yeah,
they've got personal reasons for doing it as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So there's an application process, and it will be the kinds of things that you were talking about wanting for your daughter, people who are older students maybe who struggled further down the school, maybe people whose siblings have had difficulties with their mental health, or just people who are really interested in it.
Yeah, I was just going to mention the other thing that I found really useful is, even though I have to cut down the lifts, is I do one lift a week with my youngest daughter, and that's our time to talk, because she can't get out the car.
And it's less about intense. Being in close proximity, but not having direct
eye contact.
But
you've also got a bit of a diversion, because you're driving, so you've got a diversion, and she's got a diversion because she's maybe looking at, you know, seeing who's walking up this hill and who else is around, and I don't know, but it kind of, there's something there that allows us, it has become our little safe space, and as I say, she can't get out.
And there is something about doing ordinary tasks together as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm Cathy Caton. Oh. You're listening to BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey. And with me are Jane, Harry, Daisy and Rosie. And we're talking all things parenting and teen mental health and well-being. Harry.
Sorry, I was just going to say, earlier on we were talking about this, and my view is that the kind of pastoral care in schools has improved so much since when I was a kid.
I think it was non-existent.
Absolutely, or less than non-existent. Yeah. Like, almost overtly hated it. But now I think it's much better. And we were also talking about, I don't think there's any problem our kids seeing the fact that the school and the parents are connected and they talk about things. I think some parents are afraid of going to the school. We were saying just that, afraid of going to all the kids seeing the parent at the school, and I don't think that should be the case. I think there's a good thing for the kids to see that the parents are in contact with the teachers.
Yeah, I mean, I had a case where I had to speak to the school, and they rang me, and so we did it all over the phone, and I don't mean to sound cowardice, but at that stage, I think if my daughter had seen me walk into the school, it would have just, she would have been very upset. But I think I would have done it if he hadn't have rung me, but he did. So we had a long conversation over the phone, and they were brilliant. They sorted out this particular issue, and yeah, that helped a lot.
I visited the school when my daughter was self-harming, so I went into the school to talk to them about it, and I thought they were going to judge me as a parent, and I was really nervous about going in, and they were so reassuring, gave me loads of advice as to where to seek help, put in place loads of things in terms of supporting her and me as a parent as well, and the whole family. So yeah, I think in terms of pastoral care, it's definitely improved since I was at school. There's still gaps, and it's not, I think it could be improved, and I think where Rosie works, they seem to have taken it to another level. But it's definitely better than I was certainly expecting when I approached the school.
Where else are you able to get help? Have you felt able to go out and talk to people about it, for example?
I think that's what this whole project, that's why this project came about, that's why Brighton 5 came about, is to try and get parents to help one another and get teens to help each other. So you get an older teen that has been through something, come out the other side, and the videos we're making that are going through the schools are made by older teens, aimed at younger teens. Our biggest aim really is to start to prevent some of the bigger issues happening and to understand more about why they're happening and what bits of it are cries for help and what bits of it are when you should take action. But we were talking earlier when we met up about what happens when your child comes to you with a problem and they have an emotional outpour of this problem, and then they leave, they go off back to their bedroom or whatever, and you are distraught, you are left.
I'm left with this.
Yeah. And what do you do then, and how do you make sure your mental well-being's all right and you don't feel, because you're so easy to blame yourself and think, what am I doing wrong, especially when the growth spurt happens and you don't understand what's happened. And that's, you know, so yeah.
And what do you do to stop yourself from blaming yourself?
Well, ring each other up. Yeah. This is just a meeting.
Talk to other people who are going through similar things and realise you're not alone. Cause certainly, I felt really alone when this sort of first started happening, and I sort of met Daisy and was telling her about what was going on with my daughter, and then sort of found other people in similar situations, and you actually realise you aren't alone, and your issues might not be the same, but the sort of parent-teenager relationship, I think everyone can relate to that in a certain way, in terms of the flashpoints and inability to communicate with them at certain times. So I think there's a common thread running through whatever issue you might have.
It makes a massive difference to have other people to talk to, doesn't it?
But I think, as we were saying earlier on, that it's odd that you'd think that our kids are afraid to bring it up. I think in exactly the same way a lot of parents are afraid to bring it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Is that because naming it makes it real?
I think you do hear that quite a lot. If I talk about it, that makes it real. If I talk about it, people are going to want to talk about nothing else. If I tell my parents that I feel like this, they're going to think differently of me. They'll want to talk about it 24/7. They'll judge me. They'll shame me. They'll try to police what I'm doing. And that is a big part of it. And I think there's another side to that, which is from the parents. If I talk about it, what if I'm encouraging them? What if I'm, you know, making this bigger than it needs to be by drawing attention to it?
But I think there's a huge amount of pressure on both the children and the parents to be perfect.
That whole thing about snowflake parenting, that drives me absolutely nuts, because the media do tend to portray teenagers in a really bad light. They're all troublemakers, which is why we've
hasn't
named
been going on since the 50s.
Yeah, absolutely. Forever. And that's why we named the company Make Good Trouble, because you can be you can be trouble, but you can use that, it's just energy, and you can use it in something into something really positive. But and parents are slating, I think, in the press, you know, we're snowflakes or we're lawnmower parents or we're this or we're that. You can't win. And I
what
think
is a lawnmower parent?
I've never heard of that one either.
No, there's helicopter as well.
Lawnmower
is apparently where you're mowing the lawn and the kids are walking behind you, so you're being a nice path for them and all that sort of stuff. But there's no hard and fast rule. There's no manual for bringing up a teenager. They're all different, and we're all different, and that should be respected. And I don't think it is at all. I think the media, sadly, on the whole, tend to jump on the negative story, which we're really keen to flip around, you know, and make positive stories come out, because the teenagers deserve it, because everybody was a teenager once. Sorry, I'm going to get across now.
And also, I think being a teenager is much more complex nowadays. I mean, the world is at their fingertips. They know about everything that's going on in the world. And we keep saying to them, we've messed up the world. It's down to future generations to solve all the world's problems. So not only are we expecting them to deal with their own situation at the moment, but we're putting all this pressure on them in terms of saving the world in the future, in terms of the environment, Brexit,
politically, there's not a lot of good news out there, and that's all they can hear is this doom and gloom, you know, so it's not exactly...
Plus a gut full of hormones, it's a pretty dangerous and powerful mix. So if one of the key things is about communication, and if effective communication is based on trust... How I'm thinking about one of the things you said right back at the beginning, Jane, about when you look back on being a teenager yourself and that kind of, you know, they're feeling almost like there was an element of deceit with a small d there. How do you go about building trust? When do you trust a teenager?
So I don't think it's a one size fits all. I think there's a balance between responsibility and freedom. And I think you have to sort of take each case as it comes and understand that... trust is something that's earned. I've done it terribly wrong in certain situations, but now when there's a sort of really crunch point that comes up, we sit down and sort of almost come up with a contract to sort of almost sort of set some ground rules that we both negotiate and come up with, so that we understand where that sort of trust fits into the process. And because before I was sort of winging it, and I'd have one idea and she'd have another idea and it would all go horribly wrong, so I found out the hard way that we sort of need to sit down and negotiate on a case-by-case basis
and collaborate with each other as well, so it's not things being enforced and things being done to her, it's doing things together.
Let's have the voice of another young person. Who have we got coming up next, Daisy?
I think it's a teenage boy who is 17.
I think it's hard for teens to talk to parents in particular because they don't understand, like, they're not in their shoes. But talking to, you know, a best friend or somebody close to you who's the same age is a lot easier to talk to. As a younger teen, I found it hard to express my feelings in a sensible way, because most of my feelings turn out in anger for some reason. Because I remember I used to argue as a younger teen, argue back because my opinion was right and I wanted it my way and them to understand. But now I've learned, you know, back down, because they're always going to win either way. Well, if there is a problem, I'll turn to my bestest friend and maybe my dad, because he thinks very like me.
Again, thoughts on hearing this?
Yeah, I think there's definitely, depending on the issue of what the teenager might be going through, who they turn to for help, and as that young man was saying, you know, certain things he goes to his dad because he feels that he thinks more like him, and I think that's quite true. And what do you think, Harry? But
yeah, I think I don't want to get genderist, but it's having a son, it's easier to have a conversation around some of the things that upset or annoy my son that my his mother does, and I try very, very hard not to pick sides or to undermine her, but it's interesting to get a background. I'm sure she gets the same from him in a different way about me, but it feels easier to discuss things together, and sometimes it feels a bit more reasoned where. And let's face it, my son's mother looks after him more of the time than I do, and so she gets it far more at the cutting edge than I do. But he and I can have a calmer moment every now and again to discuss things and why it might be upsetting his mum, the certain things he's doing. And he has certain chores that I will reinforce and say to him, you have to do those, don't upset mum, just get on with it and do it. You know, she's got a lot on her plate. So sometimes it's easier being a dad because you can hopefully get in a slightly less emotional environment, I think.
Rosie, what are your thoughts from kind of professional perspective? In terms of parents and teens communicating together?
Oh, sure,
Boys.
There's, regardless of if it's boys or girls, there's just a lot of conflict and a lot of negotiation that needs to happen. And I think... To add to what Harry was saying, often people feel more comfortable empathising with or feel they've got a better grip of what might be going on for a child that's the same gender as them. So it might be they're like, oh, I was a teenage boy once, I know it's probably like this, and they feel more confident, they feel like they know more, they feel like they've got more of an in, they might be able to understand the thought processes more, which can be really helpful, as well as maybe a little bit of what Jane was saying, kind of doing that a little bit too much and assuming that they are thinking and feeling exactly what you expect them to do, because teenagers often really surprise us. I know that sometimes I will be talking to a young person and thinking, oh, I'm pretty sure I know what's going on here, I'm so smart, so clever, and then they'll say something completely different, and you know, they're constantly surprising you.
Take me into the world of a flare-up.
Oh no, we don't want to relive them.
I think they for me, it becomes a point where we're, especially as Finley's growing more and more, and he wants to sort of challenge certain things, and I feel I'm backing down more than I used to, really, because he's obviously
taller
pushing
than you.
He's bigger than me now. No, and he's pushing the boundaries, and I think that's perfectly natural, and he should. But as Rosie was just saying, usually it's triggered by something that you're not expecting at all, and I don't know, he'll be screaming and shouting about tidying his bedroom, where actual fact he wasn't invited to somebody's party, and so he's very, very upset about that. And it's really difficult to try and interpret what's actually the root of the problem. And actually, I think quite often, as we probably all remember, you need the outburst and you need to get it off your chest and you need to go a bit crazy. Then you can have the tears or whatever, and then you can actually hear the real problem. And so I think it's unavoidable a lot of the times.
I think tiredness is a key factor in flare-ups for both parties, whether that's a parent or a teenager.
And hunger.
Hunger. Hangry. Hangry, yeah. Hunger, yeah. And then all of the other things that might be going on in your respective personal lives, whether that's yours or theirs. And, you know, my ability to cope with if one of my daughters is having a problem, my ability to cope with that is totally dependent on my state of mind and whether I'm, you know, tired or not hungry necessarily, but, you know, or something's going wrong with my life. So that's why I get cross with us being branded badly in the press, because who doesn't want the best for their child, you know? And so being called a snowflake or whatever it is not helpful to anyone, you know. I'm going off the topic a little bit.
And it's two people relating to each other, isn't it? It's still two people, whether you're an adult and a child or a teenager and a parent. You've both got your own emotional landscapes. You might not always be able to connect the dots in the moment and think, oh, I'm feeling quite depleted today, I'm quite tired, I'm a little bit annoyed that we're having to have an argument about this again. And then they've got their whole inner world going on as well. They feel left out, someone's looked at them funny, they're feeling tired, they've got an exam next week, they don't feel prepared for it, and nobody is able to hold all of that at once.
I think also in that clip that you just played where he says, because he's always right, that is something that I've found a lot with my daughters, is they're right and I'm not, and then the flare-up will happen because I'm not agreeing with their point of view. And and then it does come down to who is in control in your household, and then I have to, if necessary, I have to threaten with being grounded, and that's the final, there has to be a final line.
But don't you think it's interesting, there's a transition going on with teenagers that where you as an adult have to get used to going from telling them exactly what to do and being right all the time to suddenly they become teenager and they're going to negotiate and argue back and shockingly sometimes be right in their argument.
Especially when they point out what a hypocrite you are if they're saying, you're telling them, right, you're not having your devices, and they're going, but you've got yours. And you're going...
Have you heard them say things to you that you can remember saying variations of to your parents?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And sounding like my own parent when I say things to them as well. I'm thinking, I vowed I'd never say that. And you hear yourself coming out with it and you think, oh, I sound just like my mum. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
What about other siblings and other people within the house where around a flare-up?
Yeah, it's had a big impact on my family. I've got a younger son, and our flare-ups tend to be around, the worst ones tend to be around sort of bedtime. So when my younger son's asleep, he gets woken up So it has had a big impact on him, and he's become quite distressed by sort of the sort of violent outbursts that have been going on. So yeah, sometimes it's not just the relationship between you and the teenager, it's the whole family who are impacted.
Absolutely.
And you have to try and take that into account when you're thinking about, okay, so I know that bedtimes are going to be the trigger point. What can we try and do to prevent them, to try and make sure that, you know, the whole of the other family are thought of? I think initially with me, when I still had issues with my daughter, you're so focused on her because that was where the initial sort of impact was, that you almost, everything else is sort of collateral damage. But then as time goes on, you realise the impact it's having on the rest of the family as well.
No, absolutely. And when it happened with me, my eldest daughter would literally barricade herself into her bedroom, and then she would just go mute. I mean, she would just, because she said to me afterwards, if I agree with her sister, she thought I would be cross, and if she agreed with me, she thought that she would be cross. So she said the best way for her to do is absolutely say nothing. But what I realised afterwards is how much of that is she internalising, how much of that really, you know, intense combative behaviour is she internalising in a really horrible negative way, and she wouldn't come out of her room. I don't blame her, actually, but, but, you know, so it definitely has an effect.
And, Rosie, in terms of the school situation, what do you see? How do you manage it?
I think, yeah, not just conflict between family members has a massive impact. It's also conflict within peers, because if you're around that type of explosive, quite frightening arguments all the time, your systems go into high alert, you start to feel really on edge, you can't calm yourself down, you can't settle, you always feel like there's something... I'm doing this with my hand. You can't see that because I'm on the radio. It's a little alarm. It's meant to be a little alarm going off, an alarm flashing like that. So you're constantly on high alert.
I think I'd just like to add a different tangent on there. I live with my partner, and she's had to learn very, very quickly over 3 or 4 years. She hasn't got kids of her own, and how to cope with teenagers. My approach to my teenage son as well, and that she smooths over very, very carefully. And so it's not just siblings, you know, there are other potential family members if you've got new partners as well to take on board. And you know, it's tough on all the family members, I think, really.
We've got another piece of audio to hear. Who have we got?
Oh, these are 2 14-year-old girls.
Talking about parents, you suddenly have this massive responsibility for someone other than yourself for the first time in your life. And we don't have that.
No.
We're pretty selfish. Very, very selfish, in fact.
I don't think we're selfish.
I do. In the end, every adult's been a teenager, and we think, you don't know, you don't know what it's like. You never understand me, but they probably do, because they've been it before.
I'm pretty sure my mum thinks I don't even think about anybody else. I don't even think about my parents, but I actually really do think about my parents, like, a lot.
But I probably nowhere near worry or think about them as much as they worry about us.
Oh. I know, what a nice way to...
Butter wouldn't melt if you only knew.
Yes, exactly. Well, I've just got about the world of flare-ups to see. Yeah, so those, you know, reflecting what you've just heard, Daisy.
It's quite nice to hear that they say they think of us, because it doesn't feel like it on a day-to-day basis. You know, sometimes I think it's just food, money and lifts. It's my function. But actually, I know it's not true, really, because, you know, there are some incredible moments where my daughter just wants a hug, or she just wants to sit down and watch Benidorm with me, which we love watching together.
I remember once... My son stubbed his toe. He was pretty young, actually. He wasn't even a teenager. And he made such a fuss about it. He was rolling around, screaming and shouting. I said, oh, what, do you want me to take you to the hospital or something? Do you for a second? No, like this. And literally about an hour later, I put my hand on this burning saucepan handle. And I was jumping around the room, screaming and shouting. He went, Dad, I'm not joking, OK? But do you want me to take you to the hospital?
They do care.
Yay!
Jane, your experiences...
I think I probably do my daughter a disservice and think that, yeah, she only thinks about going out, friends, social media, TV shows. But the other day, she could tell I wasn't feeling very well, and she offered to make sort of lunch for the whole family. So I think they maybe just don't express it, but I think they sort of pick up on things and they do care. Yeah.
I'm wondering what messages you'd give to parents who might have just tucked their 5 and 6 year olds into bed and done a couple of hours ago, and they're listening to this and going, "No, that's not going to happen." What or are going, "Crikey, Bob, flare ups! They sound absolutely terrifying." What messages would you give to parents who've still got all of this to come, or those who are experiencing life with a teen now?
I think one of the main things I would say to a parent of a younger kid who isn't a teenager yet is don't be too frightened of technology. You know, what I've done in this running this new social enterprise is I have done so much research into technology, because we are told in the media that technology is bad for children, it's bad for their brains. But when mobile phones came out, we were all told we were going to get brain cancer, I seem to remember. But it's not it. So don't be frightened of the technology. Find out about it. But the thing that we've done, the most enlightening thing we've done, is ask the kids. Ask the children, find out the positive sides of things, because there is two sides to every argument. But I would also, you know, recommend, it's hard to prep for them becoming a teenager, but because it does seem to happen just completely overnight without any warning and any manual. But I think by doing things like this, it can highlight things and you can maybe be prepared a little bit more. I don't know.
I'd say on the technology side, educate yourself, because I think there's two types of parents. Some that go, "I don't like it, I'm not letting you have access to anything," which I think is wrong. And then I think there's the others who just let their kids do whatever they want on there, which I also think can be quite dangerous if you don't know what they're up to and what they could be viewing, especially at a younger age. So educate yourself on technology, and then I think take a deep breath. listen to your child, and don't be afraid to start the communication as young as possible.
And don't blame yourself too much, because it's easy to do that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think everybody's going through it, and everybody will go through it to some extent, some greater than others. But it's not a bad experience, and they reinvent themselves so quickly, and it's enjoyable. They're going to challenge and push the boundaries, but that's part of them growing up, and I think we're there to help them through that. It's a natural experience for them to want to push the boundaries and see how far they can go.
And we all did it.
Some more than others.
Yeah. And Rosie, from your perspective?
I think balance is important, and if you're going to be negotiating limits or boundaries, to think about what you're taking away from that young person, what that activity that they're very stuck on is taking away from them, and what it gives them, what benefits there are, what negative things it gives them, in order to kind of make an informed decision and be collaborative. And from young people that I work with, one of the main things that they say that they wish that they could have from their parents is just time, just kind of simple time just for them. And I know it's not that easy, but it's probably easier than some of the things that you might think that they would want more than anything else.
So true. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming in to talk to us. Jane, Harry, Daisy and Rosie, thank you so much.
Thank you. Live and local with Kathy Caton.